Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, it's this mid-March, not quite springtime, not quite wintertime era, and although we're going to talk about five films tonight, we even skipped three.
That's right.
There's like eight movies coming out of the movie theaters this weekend, so there's really something for everybody. Disney has an idea of what they would like you to go see, but yeah, we skipped The Strangers Pray at Night.
I missed the first one, so, you know.
We missed Thoroughbreds.
Yeah.
And we missed something called The Hurricane Heist.
I totally missed that one.
I think everybody
did.
I think that one's opening cold.
Okay.
But we did see the biggest movie opening this weekend, A Wrinkle in Time. And it broke a barrier. Disney broke a barrier by making this film. It's the first time ever they gave $100 million to an African-American woman to make a film. Mm-hmm. And there's a theme tonight. We're going to talk about five movies. Three of them, I believe, were adapted from novels. This one was adapted from a very famous 1962 young adult novel, Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle.
Mm-hmm.
I never read it. Did you read it?
I did read it. I think I read it sometime in the 1970s, probably around age 12.
The main character is Meg Murray. Here she's played by Storm Reed, a very precocious young girl. And she's looking for someone, Hannah. Who's she looking for?
She is looking for her scientist father, played by Chris Pine, by the way, who was studying the universe and, I don't know, somehow got kidnapped or lost somewhere in the universe and disappeared for 4 years.
And to help find her father, there are three, not three witches, but three misses. There's Mrs. Witch, Oprah Winfrey, Mrs. What's-It, Reese Witherspoon, and Mrs. Who, Mindy Kaling. Some people are talking about how Ava DuVernay, who directed Selma,
which I loved,
and the documentary 13th,
which was excellent,
both Oscar nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Selma won an Oscar for Best Song. She updated the material. In the book, everybody's Caucasian. It was 1962. Everybody was Caucasian. Here, it's a biracial family. Dad is Chris Pine. Mom is Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a biracial child. And the, not witches, but the misses, one of them is African-American and one of them is Indian-American.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the update?
Well, they're sort of celestial guides. Mm. I don't know how you'd otherwise describe them. But I liked Reese Witherspoon, I thought, was very good. Mindy Kaling was sort of the comic relief. She was good as well. I actually found the weak link among these three misses was Oprah Winfrey. I just felt that they tried too hard to make her this larger-than-life, sparkly-eyed woman who—
Literally larger than life.
She is literally larger than life. And it's distracting. I found her more of a distraction than a help to the plot. I just didn't think that helped the movie all that much. I was talking to somebody. I said, this film was too Oprah-fied. It's like an Oprah movie, and it really isn't. It's supposed to be Meg's movie.
It really is. The three misses are far more supporting characters than the movie poster would have you believe. And Twitter and film message blogs and message boards are blowing up. They are saying critics here, it's got a rotten tomato. It's got like a 42% right now on the tomato meter. They're saying it's so ambitious. It's so visually gorgeous, but it's not good.
Right.
And they're saying they're walking on eggshells around this movie, mm-hmm, because they're afraid of being called out for being anti-diversity or anti-inclusive. Are you seeing this?
Yes, I absolutely agree, because I felt like I'm supposed to like this movie so much. And anybody who read the novel as a kid is supposed to embrace this reimagining of the story. And to me, it wasn't about the message or the visuals. That was all well and good, great. But the story itself, the plot was a hot mess. I absolutely lost track near the end of this film as to exactly what was going on. It just didn't draw me in. All I can say is I was disappointed. I wanted so much more out of this.
I wasn't feeling this movie either. It was gorgeous. When Reese Witherspoon morphs into this magic carpet plant, that's really amazing. It's amazing looking. But I don't care about the story. And maybe it's not for me, as you would say. It's not for you, Charlie. Because before the movie even starts, Ava DuVernay gets on the screen and says, I don't want you to watch this movie as you. I want you to watch this as your 11-year-old self, your 12-year-old self.
Embrace your inner child is what she mandated.
And I wonder if she did that because of test screenings.
I think that could be the case. Because it's true, there might be a lot of 11 to 13-year-olds out there that will truly enjoy this film. So I don't want to take away from those that might get something out of it. And it is a good message. It's about, you know, it has been updated for the times, and the message is a sort of an anti-bullying kind of message. And this idea that you need to find strength in your faults. And so it's all well and good what they're trying to do. They just didn't, in the end, make a very good movie. The spectacle of the whole thing diminished the narrative. And to me, that was the biggest drawback.
Yeah, spectacle is a great word for this. It is a spectacle. And I don't know if it'll even win the weekend. Black Panther is still going strong. But it's another arrow in the quiver for a recognized talent in Ava DuVernay. But yeah, I'm just really not feeling this movie.
Yeah, I wasn't either. Sorry.
However, I did not see our next one, which is probably the second widest release, but there's a connection between the two. In A Wrinkle in Time, the bad thing, the it, is voiced by Daniel Oyelowo.
David, isn't it?
Is it David? He was Martin Luther King in Selma.
Yeah.
And there's a connection. He is also in Gringo. Tell me about Gringo.
Oyelowo. I just love saying his name. But it's also got Charlize Theron and Joel Edgerton. Mm. And Joel Edgerton's brother, Nash, actually directed this film. So that's kind of probably why he got Joel Edgerton.
Joel Edgerton in Red Sparrow played a character called Nate Nash.
Oh, interesting. So this is not a great movie, but having seen it the night after the disappointment of A Wrinkle in Time, and that's why I dragged myself the night after to go see this one, is I kind of felt like, all right, this one has a really good cast. Let's see what it is. And it's this mix of dark comedy and action and crime drama. And Oyelowo plays this poor sort of this kind of schlub of a businessman who puts too much faith in his company, which is this pharmaceutical company that is developing a medical marijuana in pill form and producing it out of Mexico. And so on a business trip, it turns out also this company is about to get taken over. And this guy finds out about that, but his co-workers, namely the Joel Edgerton and Charlize Theron characters, they pretend like it's not happening, and they all go to Mexico on this business trip, and the poor Oyelowo character gets left there, Harold. And any poor guy named Harold, you know, whenever somebody's named Harold, it's never very good for them.
You're in for it.
And they actually do a little play on that in the midst of this film. But I put it on par with Game Night in that it's this dark comedy that's just entertaining in the moment and doesn't have as many plot holes, actually. Even though the plot is preposterous, it actually weaves together stronger than Game Night did. And so it's that kind of little diversion. Charlize Theron plays sort of this psycho, ambitious executive who kind of knows how to manipulate guys in order to get ahead. And the Joel Edgerton character is just one of these greedy, sleazeball corporate guys. And so it's just Harold ends up getting stuck in Mexico, and he feigns a kidnapping in order to try and get some money from this company, but he's in over his head, and he ends up in the mix of drug lords, cartels. What was fascinating to me is that this cartel leader was known as the Black Panther. And so every time that was mentioned, I was like, bad timing, because it was just really hard to to watch a two-hour movie where the Black Panther is a cartel leader.
So I haven't seen it, so I don't have a leg to stand on, but honestly, it sounds forgettable.
It's forgettable, but it's not bad. So you know how it's one of those movies? I mean, Game Night was forgettable.
It's very forgettable.
But not bad.
It was not bad.
Right. So, and remember, I guess I felt a little bit of a The Nice Guys movie.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a sort of lost in... Very few people saw that 2016 movie, and it was very entertaining,
like,
and
a nice
dark
guy.
Comedy kind of crime drama vibe. And so this one, I would say if you like that one, then you'll like this one. Catch it on a plane. I mean, you don't have to run out to the theater to see it, but I was kind of relieved to enjoy it actually more than A Wrinkle in Time, because I was so sad. That, and it was at the same theater, so it was two nights in a row in the same theater, and I really had decided that I sure hope Gringo is a surprise, and it was. This one exceeded my expectations a little bit, whereas A Wrinkle in Time had just not met my expectations.
Well, you know what did not meet my expectations is our next film. And it was nominated for a Golden Globe. I'm about to talk about a Golden Globe nominated film called The Leisure Seeker. Now, you remember just before the Oscars on the red carpet, Ryan Seacrest got into some hot water. And everyone was like, I can't believe the E! Network is still having Ryan Seacrest out there, because he got accused of some things. And one of the people he interviewed was Donald Sutherland on the red carpet. And he said, we all loved your performance in The Leisure Seeker. And that's what blew up Twitter. Everyone's like, no, we did not all love Donald Sutherland's performance in The Leisure Seeker. How dare you lie to us, Ryan Seacrest? Don't lie to us.
Oh, I mean, but they all do it. They all do it. And I don't think half of them have seen any of these movies that they talk about when they're interviewing the stars on the red carpet. If he had really seen anything, I would have loved to see him go, I loved your performance in Basmati Blues.
Oh, my Lord. Were you saying?
That would have been very
Basmati
funny.
Basmati Blues. But no, it wasn't the film or Donald that was nominated. Helen Mirren was nominated for Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy, and I honestly don't know why.
Really? For the Golden Globe? She was nominated
she was.
For this? I totally missed
she
that.
Was. So it's based on a 2009 novel by a man named Michael Zadurian, and it's directed by an Italian-American filmmaker called Paolo Virzi. And it's about a couple, a runaway couple, in their 1970s RV. They're driving from Boston to Key West. Hannah, tell us why this couple probably should not be on the road.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I felt that they had some reason to be on the road. It's a bittersweet final road trip in their Winnebago, in their beloved Winnebago.
What's the Winnebago called?
The Leisure Seeker.
The Leisure Seeker. That's where we get the title.
There you go. There's where the title comes from. And it's no surprise. He has Alzheimer's and she has cancer. And so they are going on this, what is essentially a final road trip. He's always wanted to go visit Ernest Hemingway's tourist trap of a house in Key West. And so that's where they're headed. And it has some very, it's really about the struggles in there, realizing that, they're in their final years together, and they are struggling through health issues, but they're trying to reignite their romance, their love of many decades. And so, but it's tough because he sort of goes in and out of remembering who he is and who she is, and she's having to put on this really horrendous wig because she's been, she's probably losing her hair. And it's Helen Mirren and Donald Sutherland, and that is the only redeeming value of watching this movie, is there is something about watching these two veteran actors portray this very raw, authentic type of scenario. It's a tough watch. They're marketing it all wrong. It's being marketed as a comedy, and I'm like, there is nothing all that funny about this movie. It's just kind of a bittersweet flick.
I avidly disliked this film, and you're right. I'm seeing words, revelation, surprise, fun.
There's nothing fun
about this. It's not a feel-good, fun watch. No. Of course it's depressing just because it's almost a horror film because this is all is going to happen to us. No matter what we do, this is going to happen to us. And that's fine. There's plenty of movies about that. But I didn't like them. And there's also this political subplot going on. They stumble into a Trump rally.
That was awful.
And he forgets he's a Democrat, so he starts chanting, "Make America Great Again." And then they stumble into a Hillary convention at a hotel. That comes out of nowhere and just doesn't belong.
Yeah, it didn't belong.
And then, I don't know, they get into hijinks on the road. They have to use a gun at one point. He's falling apart, and he just does not belong outside of an old folks home. He doesn't belong. And it's like, Helen Mirren, what are you doing to him right now? This is almost elder abuse, having him out there on the road.
I didn't see that.
And it's just a crime waiting to happen. He should not be driving an RV.
Well, there's that possibility, but I didn't see that there's anything wrong. I understood that they're wanting to exert their independence as long as they possibly can.
She's not a good enough caretaker. He keeps wandering away. 5 times she had to enlist help to track him down. He left her at a gas station. He wanders off at the beach. She is not an effective caretaker.
Well, and I do think that their attempts to make it feel current didn't work. It fell flat. So those instances where they're suddenly, because it was supposed to be 2016 is when this is all happening. And so that's where you've got the Trump stuff coming into play. And it felt so forced in there. It just did not track in any good way. But the thing that some people will also be able to relate to, though, is that there are the adult children of this pair that are just mortified. That's basically what you are right now.
By the way,
going,
their son's a terrible actor.
I know.
I did not look at his
but
name.
But the
girl's from West Wing.
The woman was Donna in West Wing. Yeah. And I'm like, whatever happened
Janelle
to Donna?
Janelle Maloney.
So she's sort of playing the daughter who's kind of going, you know what? Let them be. They're doing their thing.
Let them kill themselves.
And the son is like, how could they do this to us and just run away from home like that? And so it's got some relatable elements, but overall, this is not a joyride. This is not a fun road movie.
No, and it's
this
too long.
This is a poignant end of life. Let's take one final trip kind of thing. And the ending is one that I certainly saw coming.
Oh, I saw it coming a mile away.
Yeah.
But it's got the lowest tomato score of the week at 33%, and that even seems high.
Yeah, I mean, really, 3 out of 10 people.
3 out of 10 like
about
this.
As many
who
as...
are you three? All right.
Ryan Seacrest is one.
I don't know if you saw our next movie. Oh, Lucy.
I saw 5 minutes of it. Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to get to the rest of it.
So the night before the Oscars, every year they do something called the Film Independent Spirit Awards. So usually the Oscar nominees that are in the independent film. So there's no Shape of Water here. There's no Darkest Hour. So now, since there's no Gary Oldman and there's no Guillermo del Toro, now other people can start to win awards. So Frances McDormand shows up in her pajamas. Your boy Timothy Chalamet finally won an acting award. Jordan Peele won, and Get Out won for just best film. So it's really a fun watch. It takes place in like a hangar in Santa Monica. Well, this tiny – it celebrates independent film, and this tiny film popped up twice, and I knew I was going to watch it. It's called Oh, Lucy. It was nominated for Best First Feature and Best Female Lead. Best First Feature from a new director, a new Japanese director called Atsuko Hiroyanagi. And the new – the Best Female Lead was Shinobu Terajima. Now, no, neither of them won, but – I loved Oh, Lucy. It won a Sundance Award. It was at Cannes. So this has been around. And it's 100% on the tomato meter. 27 fresh, 0 rotten.
Wow.
I'm on board with Oh, Lucy.
I do want to go and go back and finish watching it. I had only gotten to the point where she had entered into – it's takes place in Japan. So it actually is sort of a – isn't it?
The first like 15 minutes take place.
I didn't get past Japan.
So Lucy is her Americanized name that Josh Hartnett pops up in this little tiny nothing of a film. He's an English teacher in Tokyo. He names her Lucy. Lucy is a very lonely chain smoking office lady, and she falls head over here in lust and infatuation with her English teacher. Josh Hartnett. He up and disappears back to Los Angeles. She hops on a plane and begins an adventure to find him.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot more to it than that, but that's the main gist of it. And there's themes of depression. Lucy's depressed, and you know she's nearing that age in her life where there's a lot more behind her than in front of her. There's a lot of quirky humor. There's absurdity. Megan Mullally pops up in a very limited role, but funny. I just loved watching Lucy and how she's, you know, changed. It takes place in about a week. This is a week in her life that's changing her entire life. She's making choices that's going just to affect everything. And it's just so fun to watch. And it's a brand new director. I've never heard of any of these people except Josh Hartnett. And just what a lovely, tiny little film. And I just adore that Film Independent recognized them.
I've heard nobody has talked badly of it. I've only heard positive things. When I saw that Josh Hartnett was in it, I was very surprised because you're reading through, like, you know these names. You said the names very well of the lead and the director. And so to suddenly see this interesting mix of a few mainstream actors in the midst of what looks like to a foreign film was interesting. And so, yeah, granted, I have to get beyond the first 15 minutes because I was still in Tokyo when I was watching this film and did not realize that it shifts over. So does it shift over to all English? Because it was a lot of English subtitles during the first few minutes that I was watching.
It goes back and forth. There's a lot more English once they get to L.A., but she's not the only Japanese person that travels. I don't want to give away who she travels with, but... Okay. Hijinks ensue, but it's not just like, what was it that was being billed? Leisure Seeker.
Leisure Seeker.
That was being billed as this riotous comedy that is not. This is not a riotous comedy. There's humor in it. I did laugh, but it is so much deeper than just comedy.
Okay. I will definitely go back and finish watching.
And I really liked it far more than the last film we're going to talk about. What I just truly got upset at is a film called Submission, Stanley Tucci and his very convincing toupee.
<That's right.
laughs> It's directed by a man named Richard Levine. This is his second feature film. He did one in 2010 I've never heard of, starring Liev Schreiber, called Every Day. He also did four episodes of Nip Tuck.
Okay.
It's also based on a novel by Francine Prose from 2000 called Blue Angel. Blue Angel makes an appearance in this as a Marlena Dietrich film. And if you know about that film, it kind of gives the story away here. He's a creative writing college professor. He takes an interest in a young student. But what, Hannah, is wrong with his interest in his said young student?
Well, there's two things that are wrong. One is he becomes rather obsessed with said young student and sort of has a bit of a fling with said student. And said student turns out to be a psycho and a manipulative student. And so in this age of Me Too, this is kind of turning all of that on its head, where you question whether this professor was basically busted. And, it becomes a question of whether this girl was abused, whether there was a power dynamic at play here and that he abused that power with this impressionable young student, or whether the student knew exactly what she was doing and took advantage of a tremendous character flaw in her professor. And I mean, it's important to point out that he's married in this movie to Kira Sedgwick, and so it's not that he's, you are sort of taken aback by the fact that he might potentially cheat on his wife, because she's smart, attractive, a loving wife. And so you're like, what are you doing? You know, you're going to totally screw up your life by falling deeper and deeper into your obsession with this student.
Well, in his opening voiceover, he says he knows he is a cliche. He had one very successful novel, never wrote the follow-up, just didn't have it in him, and now he's, a tenured professor, 10 years at this Vermont liberal arts college. So he is really a walking cliche. And just last week, we talked about, movies are, the audience reacted to them in two ways. One, just by watching the movie, they laughed, they cried. And two, by timing. Death Wish failed because of timing. This glorification of firearms happened on top of Parkland. Bad timing. submission is horrible timing. It lands with this wet thud because this film about saying the student is lying about sexual harassment. She's lying and ruining this guy's life. Granted, he is no angel. He makes mistakes and poor choices. But she is trying to ruin his life to further her own goals and is actually anti sexual harassment. It's calling them liars.
But whereas you say that makes for terrible timing, I say it actually is good timing in terms of precipitating, driving discussion about the Me Too movement and the boundaries and how you define, a harassment situation versus an entrapment situation versus somebody who is just out to ruin somebody's life. And so I actually think that the timing of this whole movement works in the film's favor, because otherwise I would just say it wouldn't promote any kind of dialogue, but I think it forces a different angle to the dialogue.
Yeah, and people think that women now who are getting too much attention will love this movie.
I see.
They're going to say, no, they're not all telling the truth. They're lying.
I didn't look at it that way at all.
There's no question whether or not she's telling the truth. The movie shows you what she's doing.
She's lying. But I disagree that it works against the Me Too movement. I just think
Harvey Weinstein would be all about this movie right now. This is his favorite movie.
Oh, I don't know. I just didn't read as much into the that part of it as you did. I did not particularly like this movie. I found it kind of boring, actually. That was the biggest drawback for me, is that I just thought it was pretty darn boring.
I was too angry to be bored.
You were angry because you were messaging me too, that you were not happy while watching this film. But Stanley Tucci, you know, he's a very good actor. So, I mean, I liked his performance. The performances were all pretty solid.
No, and the girl, Angela Argo, is the character name. She's played by Addison Timlin. She was very good.
Yeah, so you take the acting and a little bit of the potential for having dialogue surrounding this film, and that gives it some credence. But I can't recommend it, mostly because I was just bored.
No, it's just no. I wish I could have been bored. I was too riled up.
I didn't get riled up. I just got bored.
All right, quick recap. When it comes to dark versus light, I'll take The Neverending Story any day over A Wrinkle in Time.
Absolutely. That's very true. I would rewatch The Neverending Story.
Gringo.
Gringo, if you already saw Game Night and went, oh, that was tons of fun, what's out next? This is the movie for you. But otherwise, you can wait and try and find a sanitized version on the airplane.
Everyone's parents and grandparents and AARP members are going to ask, should I see The Leisure Seeker?
Hey,
no.
Hey, I'm an AARP member.
You should
it's not that old.
See The Leisure Seeker.
It's a tough one. You just have to be very careful and know what you're getting into. But don't bother.
Oh, Lucy is by far the best film of the week, and you would do yourself credit and your soul credit to find it.
I'm not sure I can say that because I haven't seen it yet, and I did think that Gringo was probably your better bet for a more mainstream offering, but it is intriguing me enough that I will go back and watch the rest of Oh Lucy.
I'm still mad about Submission. I would say go see The Leisure Seeker over Submission.
Ouch. Oh, I don't know. I kind of put them both on the same road, so, you know, it's both are headed for bad destinations in the end.
Did you want to do an Oscar recap?
Well, all I'd say about the Oscars is, one, it's still too long. Jimmy Kimmel's got to skip the shtick with going across the street.
Hate that shtick.
And I am so, so, so bummed still that Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri lost to Shape of Water. I do not understand that. I still think it's wrong. I will defend Three Billboards to the end. Everything else, I really was like, yeah, no big surprise.
Except for the short films.
Yes.
That was a surprise.
We tanked on our short film
predictions. The Silent Child won for live action short, which is just what?
A PSA winning for live action short.
And your favorite, Heaven is a Traffic Jam on 405, won doc short.
I didn't get that one.
And Icarus, I think that's my biggest surprise tonight, is that Icarus won doc. One best documentary.
Yeah, but hey, did you happen to notice in the news this week that, remember back when we saw Icarus, we also saw the Year of the Scabs about the Washington Redskins. They're all going to finally get a ring.
Are they really?
They are going to get their Super Bowl ring.
It's such a good, it was a 30 for 30, like an ESPN mm-hmm. film, and it was the closing night of the AFI Docs Film Festival, and it was so good, and it was just a local story, and you really felt for these guys. They did such a, they were just in an impossible situation. One guy got out of jail to play quarterback and then went back to jail.
Yeah.
And now they're getting all rings. Oh, what a good, what a happy ending.
Exactly.
What a happy
ending. That was a triumph of the week for me, was reading that. I'm like, they're getting their rings. Yeah.
All right. Quick teaser for next week. It hasn't been that long, but they already rebooted Tomb Raider.
I know. I'm like, didn't that just come out? That was Angelina Jolie, right?
It's like 2001.
Yeah, so but it's Alicia Vikander, so
I'll take what I can get from her, but does it have to be Lara Croft?
I know.
Come
but
on.
We'll see it anyway, probably.
All right. Well, on behalf of the Cinema Clash, I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you for listening.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.